può dire che nel no.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today, I've got something a little bit different. I was recently on Nikos's podcast, and in that podcast is the audio and video podcast. We talked about a Mad Max world or post-apocalyptic type scenario where, you know, something is large scale and long lasting. And it was such a good conversation. I wanted to replay it here. I'll also leave the links to Nikos' show, his YouTube channel, in the description of this podcast, and you can go check him out. He has quite a few very cool guests on his show. But this was a really good show. We covered quite a few different things. A little bit of politics towards the end about, you know, what the politicians around the world, because he's in Ukraine right now. I believe he's from Scotland and he's in Ukraine right now. So it's a outside of the United States perspective. But we talked about quite a few things. We talked about the die-off. We talked about groups and community. We talked about where we are headed in the future as far as with AI, automation, universal basic income. Just a lot of different things that we talked about in this show. So with that, let me get into the show now. Really good show. And like I said, I will leave the links if you want to check out his show or his YouTube channel. I will leave those in the description below. But let's go ahead and get into this conversation.
Terminator is out there. It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with. It doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear. And it absolutely will not stop ever. Until you are dead.
So today we have Dale Goodwin, who is the owner of the bugoutlocation.net and also survivalistprepper.net, I believe. How's it going, sir?
Good. How you doing, Nico? It's been a while since we've talked. You were on my podcast, I don't know, 6 months ago or so.
Yeah, indeed. I've become, in a sense, addicted to playing electric guitar. So I've been learning some of Van Halen's riffs on Jump, and I was playing so much guitar recently that my arm was just like getting sore like 3 or 4 hours. That's my it's gonna be a lot of music podcasts coming up, I guess.
Nice. Yeah, you gotta, with all the crap going on, especially probably where you are, you gotta base yourself a little bit and do the things you enjoy. You gotta live your life, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to reduce my screen time, and I find that the guitar is like, there's just so many upsides playing the guitar. It's like something that you continually get better at, and you can express your emotion through the guitar in a way that it's hard to do in another instrument, like just a piano or, you know, those kind of instruments where you just press a button, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So when it comes to survival and prepping, I guess most of the useful things that I've learned from it is, in a sense, like just having like good everyday carry EDC so that things are more convenient for you. So like having a rope for various situations, having a lighter with you, having a small knife. When it comes to like extreme scenarios, then a lot of the stuff that people do as individuals won't really cut it in like a Mad Max scenario. You really have to form a tribe with a sort of constitution, and that has to be, you almost have to be far away from cities to have any hope of surviving like a proper World War III event.
Yeah, that whole lone wolf, it's just a fallacy. Nobody's going to be able to do it alone. And I, you know, sometimes in preparedness prepping, there's this idea of what prepping is, and people, you know, probably around the world think of it as these crazy wackos, you know, hiding in their bunkers, doing things like that. And, you know, just a bunch of food storage, which is probably true for some people, but I'm that a boring prepper, I suppose, because I look at things more realistically about what would happen in situations and how likely a situation is. So like the Mad Max you were talking about would be, it's not impossible. Something like that could happen, but it's more unlikely than a natural disaster or something that's smaller scale, something that affects you individually rather than a nuclear war. But with that being said, you were talking about one of the things I think a lot of people sort of disregard is the fact that you do need community. You are going to need other people, regardless whether they are preppers, not preppers, whether they are, you know, doing the same things as you, you're going to need other people. That's mm-hmm. how civilizations have been built throughout history, because you need doctors, lawyers, blacksmiths, gunsmiths, veterinarians, all sorts of ranchers, farmers. I mean, everybody comes together and puts in their two cents, I suppose, and helps build that community. And the same thing on a much smaller scale in preparedness. If something goes down and you're by yourself, you know, good luck. But if something goes down and you've got friends and neighbors that are going through the same thing as you, and you can sort of band together and help each other out, your odds are going to increase at that point. So I think, yeah, it's that community factor, that group factor is very important. Whether that is a MAG group, which they call it in preparedness, the mutual assistance group, or it's just your neighbors, people around you that are going through the same thing, and you start to work together to get through a situation. I think that is super important. More important, I think, than having a super fortified bunker under your house. Although I would take one of those.
I think the most likely semi-Mad Max scenario would be probably a civil war. Well, actually, yeah. Also, World War III is still kind of likely now, the way things are heading.
Very true. Well, and where you are right now, too. I mean, I say this from sitting here in America, in the United States. And where you are, you're a little closer to the front lines, I think, than I am.
Yeah, I'm Western Ukraine at the moment. But I get to leave. All my friends here basically can't leave.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, out where you are, I think doing what you can, and I'm sure you do, but doing what you can just to sort of look at what the possibilities are for you and make sure you're preparing for those. And I think that is preparedness. It is all the trinkets and gadgets are cool, but when you're talking about survival, there's only so much that a pocket knife or a multi-tool is going to do for you. You really need to think. I think it's more of a mental thing, being realistic about the situation and understanding what could happen and preparing for that. And I think that's different from everybody. Like I said, just different for me sitting here than it is for you sitting there.
I think if you wake up during the night with panic attacks about like a Mad Max scenario, what would you do? I think you want to get away from cities as much as possible. That would be like the main thing. And then you'd go and read the book One Second After and read how they basically fell back to 18th century technology, where they had like hand drills for dentists. They had basic pharmaceutical processes for making things like, I believe, chloroform and things like that. Things that don't require complicated infrastructure. Things like tires would be basically non-existent after about 20 years I'm going through a book right now called The Earth Abides, which is a fantastic audio book, which is basically a virus takes out most of the earth, and it basically goes through construction civilization, you know, from scratch. But a lot of the things in common are basically it's 18th century technology, things that you can, without having to have a specialist PhD in certain areas of electronics and things like that, that you can mentally achieve, because even just to make tires requires so much people and knowledge that in a Mad Max scenario, you're not going to get new tires. The main source of transport is going to be horses, rubber is not going to be around, and if you're not going to be able to make tires without complicated infrastructure. And so you should be learning how to capture wild horses, which is one of the things I picked up from that book. So horses are basically machines, biological machines that self-replicate and self-maintain. Anything mechanical like a car, basically useless in the Mad Max scenario.
Yeah. Well, the one caveat to that, since we're talking about this sort of post-apocalyptic kind of world, if you're talking 10 years down the line, one, you know, hopefully you're there. Hopefully you've survived, because there's going to be a lot of people that didn't. But we do have, if it's accessible or not is the question, but we do have a lot. We've learned a lot in the last, 1,000 years or so, as far as technology and electronics. And if you do have some of that stuff, like wires, for, you know, setting up lights or light bulbs themselves. If you do have some of that stuff and that knowledge, some of that would be still around. But like you said, with tires, bullets and things like that would be in very, very short supply. You'd have to figure out, it'd be like the old West, the wagons, the wooden wheels and the Flintstones with the the rock tires and things like that. I mean, you would have to think about that stuff. I always talk about how the United States went through the Great Depression in the 30s, and the way that people lived through that, we can learn a lot from something like that, how they had to survive. I think people would be in for a huge culture shock these days, especially here in the United States, with the how things would change in a situation like that. Initially, it would be harder. I mean, you can't get online. You can't post to Snapchat. You can't do all this crap. Watch endless movies 24/7. A lot of people here in this country are just hypnotized by all that stuff. So it would be tough to handle that. But then adjusting to the new normal, like you said, with horseback and doing all the things sort of like they did 1,000 years ago and understanding what they did. A lot of people don't understand that and wouldn't have a clue where to start.
A Mad Max scenario is basically, if you want to prep for a Mad Max, you're basically learning how to be I wouldn't say psychopathic, but a very selfish person, because you're sort of hoarding all this food so you and your tribe can survive, and you're watching lots of other communities around you basically starve to death so that you can survive. And that's, if you really want to prepare for that kind of stuff, that's the kind of skills you're going to have.
Well, wouldn't you have to, though? I mean, it sounds horrible, yeah. But in a situation like that, the other people are doing that. So if you don't, you're not going to last very long. So it's sort of that double-edged sword of where in a situation like that, where you take your morals and the type of person you are, and I think it probably changes over the course of time, because there are things that you would have to, you see it in movies all the time. And that's why as preppers, we like to watch some of these post-apocalyptic movies, because they're a bit ridiculous, but they do have these little seeds that make you think about certain situations and what you would do in that situation. And there's a lot of weighing back and forth of, yes, I'm a better person than this. I don't want to do this, but if I don't, they're going to do it to me. So what choice do I really have? Or if you have family members, children, a wife, I mean, things like that, that would really change how you deal with a situation if somebody's out to get you. And in a post-apocalyptic Mad Max type situation like that, that's going to be everywhere without rule of law and, you know, things like that. It is, you know, sort of like I mentioned earlier, the Old West, where the mountain men and you had the bears and all the animals out there that want to eat you. It's kind of the same thing, except it's just people.
So the typical Western individualistic person is going to be a disadvantage to gangs. The gangs are going to have an immediate advantage because they have a system of their authority, yeah, or the mafia, whatever. Unless you have a tribe ready to go, that's at least at large, as large and as potentially violent as them are, they're going to basically rule and form, in a sense, their own. Basically, they will rule. So you have to, that's one of the things you'd have to prepare for. So a lot of the individualistic societies, the ordinary person is really going to struggle. In Ukraine, we already have a lot of people here that are community focused. So we already have a lot of places in rural areas and, you know, there's a lot of community, so those people will be able to get together and form a group pretty quick if things had to get organized, or like say for example the water stopped running or food started running out. You know, there would have to be some pretty quick organization.
Yeah, and you get a group of people also being able to talk and converse about how to get this or that done. This is the problem. What do we do? And you get different ideas, and yeah, it all boils back down to community and support. You've got those other gangs, like you were talking about in this scenario, those other gangs forming and everything. The same thing would be, it almost be like two sides forming, or yeah, you know, maybe 10 sides, who knows? But you'd basically the good guys and the bad guys. They would form that group, the marauders, or the, you know, the guys that are just wanting to come and take and steal and do whatever they can to survive. And then you've got the other group that is, or the other side of that coin, where they're trying to build up that community, build up something that is sort of sustainable. But in order to do that, you have to be able to protect it too. And you'd have to be able to fight off those people, knowing that because they know you're trying to build something up, they are going to try to come get it. So, it's in that scenario. And I don't know how likely something like that is. I mean, it could happen on a small scale for a number of years, but the people in power, they want to stay in power. And if they're not in power, somebody else is going to want to be in power. So there's eventually going to be some sort of organization. You know, doesn't mean we're going to like it, but somebody is going to seize control, whether that's a king, a monarch, you know, whatever it is. But I don't see something, you know, spread out that long where everything is just complete chaos. But this is, it is hypothetical, and it is possible that I suppose it is good to think about these types of things, because it does, in a smaller scale type situations, it does help you think about how you're going to navigate those and think about what things are truly important and what things you might do and have to do.
A lot of the traditional communities in the West are being displaced by other ethnic groups. And at some point, that could turn into a civil war, or people are just completely outbred, in a sense, because a lot of the Western countries are not having, it could be a peaceful transition, or there could be, you know, a civil war breaking out if people just don't want to convert to whatever, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, is the assimilation part. And it doesn't, like here in America, and I'm sure it's the same all over the place. I know France is all up in arms about some of this stuff. And it's sort of like, I don't know if your viewers are going to understand unless they're here in the United States, but I live in Colorado, and in Colorado, we're sort of conservative and, you know, just leave me alone. Let me do what I'm doing. And then you've got California, which is super liberal and just will allow anything, or doesn't allow anything, basically. And then a lot of those people are moving here, and not, instead of changing the way they live, they're trying to change the way the things are here. And I think that is the big problem. When you talk about here, you talk about France, you talk about all these places that are experiencing this, we all have our different cultures, and it's been this way for, you know, 1,000 years. And now these other people coming in don't want to assimilate and don't want to change to that. I think that's what causes those clashes. And that is definitely, that is higher on my radar than a Mad Max type thing, because that would cause civil war, that would cause a lot of different things that may or may not affect me on a personal level, like here at my house. It just depends on where things start to break out. But I think that is something that it's not being handled correctly. And I'm all for, you know, the immigration and all that to a certain extent, as long as it's handled correctly. But I don't think it is in many places in the West. I don't think it is. It's sort of just like opening the gates and letting them come in, and we'll deal with the problems afterwards. My opinion, though.
So going back to like lone wolf stuff, have you picked up any more bushcraft skills since I last talked?
I haven't really. What I've been working on the last 6 months or so is more of the alternative energy side of things. So I've been working on solar power. I built my own little battery bank, which has got 2 100-amp-hour batteries, an inverter, and then some solar panels to be able to charge that during the day. Because I think regardless of what disaster or what emergency you're talking about, having the ability to power something is in every single one, I think. Just like food, water, and being able to have a little bit of light at night or cook your meals. Those, regardless what situation you're talking about, those are sort of universal. So I've been working on that quite a bit, working on the different options that I would have, even if it's just a little bit of light, even if it's just entertainment. Like you were talking about playing guitar, you got to keep your sanity, right? And having a few DVDs or something, you know, with no internet or anything like that, you would have to be able to get a DVD player, power that up in a small TV and watch the, especially if you have kids, watch a movie or something. So I've been working on that quite a bit, not necessarily for the movie part, but being able to cook, being able to generate a little bit of power, not as much as I use these days, but that has been my main focus these last few months. And it'll probably change after that because I do like the bushcraft side of it. I do like the wilderness skills side of it. I don't know how feasible the whole bugging out thing is and, you know, leaving everything behind that I have here and having to go out and, you know, eat wild mushrooms and stuff like that. But I do enjoy that stuff. So I like going camping and I like going out hiking and into the wilderness. So, and honestly, that could, that knowledge could be very important in a number of different situations. So it's not something that I just forget about, but right now I've been working on alternative energy.
When I look around the surroundings in terms of like just plants and things like that, you almost need to have like a Mad Max study happen at the ideal time of the year. So you won't happen like, like March or something, so that all the plants can like, that are there, that are growing, you can harvest them and dry the, you know, something like, there's a lot of nettles, so you could just harvest all those nettles and dry them and store them in jars for winter time. But there's other plant things as well. There's lots of like, in terms of calories, that's the thing that's going to be the hardest to provide yourself. So you've got like, you could also just like the dandelions, you could harvest a whole bunch of those leaves and dry them. I don't know, you almost have to sort of spend a day or two researching each individual plant and how they can be stored.
Yeah, but, I think it probably more than a day or two. I think everyone should really know sort of what in their area is viable. And also at what time of year, like, you know, cattails out here, for example, I'm sure they have them in Ukraine too, but there are certain times of year when they're either blooming or, you know, they're mushrooms, again, certain time of year, even trees, pine cones and things like that. So understanding what time of year something is going to be viable and what time of year it's not. And then, like you said, storing, learning how to store that stuff and the best practices for food storage is super important. And again, this goes back to living like they did 1,000 years ago or so. People had to figure out how to store food over the winter, whether that's salting meat, if you actually have meat, because I don't think in a Mad Max situation like you're talking about, I don't think there's going to be much wild game at all available. So I don't know that meat's going to be very viable. And with that, you got to think about all the yahoos out there that have never hunted, trying to hunt a cow or not a cow, a pig or something like that. You better get some Kevlar just to go hunting.
Yeah, there's basically zero chance of 99% of people that are not homesteaders being able to just the next day start living off of the land. It's just impossible because your body is not able to eat grass. You need a bunch of goats around you to take that grass, the energy that comes from the sun, and turn that into milk and meat. And that's how people lived before we had complicated technology. So have you seen the movie Threads?
Threads? F-R-E-D-S?
Threads, T-H-R-E-D-S.
Oh, Threads. No.
That's the most scary nuclear apocalypse movie there is. It was made in 1984. It was commissioned by the BBC during the Cold War to train the British public. But it's required watching. It's not a fun. It was made by an Englishman who specialized in making movies about the working class.
I'm going to have to watch that.
Science is really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has a whole EMP strike, everything like that as well.
Yeah. I'm going to have to watch that. I think that, and I don't know if you've heard these numbers, but, and I can't remember where it came from, but I think they're pretty viable. I think they're pretty accurate, but 90% in like 3 months and maybe even less than that, 90% of the population will die off, whether that's for the reasons you were talking about. Sure. In a situation like we're talking about today, large scale, whether it's the reasons you were talking about, where people just are not equipped anymore to deal with life that way, or illness, age, people are dependent on medications, things like that, that 90% of the people would be just gone after just a month or so, a few months. And then after that, that's where comes in what you were talking about with the groups and people, whether that's good, bad, or in between, those groups forming and figuring out how the new normal is going to unfold. And everybody's going to want the seat at the front of that table. So it's that would be pretty insane. And then you've got, you know, if there's other countries involved, I mean, so many different possibilities with that. But anyway, what do you think about that whole 90% dying off in a month or two?
At least 90%. Even in like Ukraine, where a lot of people have homesteading here, there's not enough calories to go around if the complicated technology and infrastructure would not function. So that, in that movie Threads, it talks about like a spider's web. There's intricately complicated and finely detailed, but the threads that bind us together are very thin. And if you disrupt that, there's so many ways the whole web can fail. And the way that we can not need to be survivalists nowadays is because everybody's very specialized in what they do. We have a society that can feed a lot more people than we used to do with just like manual labor and horses and carts. We have oil, which then we have all these tires, you know, that can have vehicles to move all those calories around that support much more people on the land than used to be possible. Because like even just like one person, they can maybe have 10 goats here, and that they need a large pieces of land. And you see, there's only maybe 1% of people in Ukraine have goats, but they still need a large area for these goats. They can basically eat a whole field, right? So
yeah, we have two horses, and you let them out in the, and we only have a couple of acres. But if you let them out there, it'd be gone in 2 days, guaranteed. So yeah, you'd need it takes a lot of land, yeah, and it takes a lot of resources to feed everybody that we are these days. And it would be, see, there's a lot of things, and maybe this is why people don't like to think about the possibilities, because there are a lot of things where most people just don't have an answer for. And sometimes there just isn't an answer for it. We can build up our food storage, we can build up our water storage and all of those things, but that's only going to last so long too. There's no way to prepare 20, 30 years, you know, store. I guess if you're rich, you probably could. If you were Mark Zuckerberg, maybe, but 20, 30 years worth of food and hope everything is fine by then. But there's no way to do that. So even people that are looking at these and people, preppers like us, are looking at things like me, need to understand that, okay, this is sort of a stopgap measure. This is only going to last for a certain amount of time. And then I've got to figure out what my other methods are, whether that's gardening, animal husbandry. I don't know. I've got some chickens, but I don't have any experience, you know, raising cows or anything like that. So, but those are things in a longer term, you would have to think about. And those are things that people just don't want to think about because, one, it's scary, and two, there really are no answers.
Mm-hmm. So I was inspired by the biblical story of Joseph, where they stored food for 7 years and they lived off the grain for 7 years. And I spent about 4 hours reading some research papers on nuclear winter. And I think it was something like 7 or 10 years they're expecting the Northern Hemisphere to be covered in soot. And I worked out the cost of how many ration bars you could. They're basically the high density ration bars that are made from various ingredients, minimalistic ingredients, from vitamins, that kind of stuff. And it costs about 10,000 euros for basically one person, like an average man, to survive for 7 years. That's a lot of money for people, but if everybody spent that much money, they could survive with enough energy for 7 years. But then if everybody started buying those things, the demand, they wouldn't have enough demand. So the price would go way up probably, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then you've got the people that don't have the money or don't want to spend that money, but they still want some. So you'd have to be able to defend all that stuff too. There are just so many. it's not as easy as having all that stored. You got to be able to protect that stuff too. And you've got to, Just a lot of things, and it gets more complicated as things go along too. You know, you're talking about something that lasts a week, not a huge deal. That's easy to prepare for, right? You talk about something that is going to last that long. One, you got to make sure you're there to deal with the situation. And then two, you've got to make the best decisions you possibly can to sort of extend that time frame. And it is no, you know, there's no guarantee. I don't care how much you prepare. I don't care how many guns and ammo and all that stuff you have. There's no guarantees.
Well, I advocated a tax to have the local community center store that rations. So you'd basically have the local authority. But they're more interested in things like what is a woman than this kind of stuff. So
yeah, that's all that important stuff, right?
Yeah. Instead of preparing for food shortages.
Yeah. The world's on fire, but you know, we're concerned about all this other stuff. Yeah. The world just seems like upside down to me. And I think it's because of the people we allow to lead us, but it's, yeah, some of the things that are really super important issues to people. And then they, you know, like preppers, we get a bad rap. Then they look at me for being concerned about all this other stuff as some kind of conspiracy theorist or whack job or something like that. It's like, you know, I'm looking at them going, okay, you've got your priorities wrong, in my opinion, but okay. You do what you do. I'm going to try to be part of that 10%.
So in regards of trying to, we should avoid nuclear war, and we should also not let dictators get away with things. So I guess everybody has to, in their own mind, think, okay, we want to absolutely avoid nuclear war, so we must do everything not to annoy Putin so much that he would start nuclear war. But at what point do you say, okay, he has this much land, then we have to stop him? So should we let him take Poland, France? You know, at what point do we stop his tanks moving? You have to decide that in your head. Will you let him come to America? You know, or just let him... Like have like a world with like 1984, you know, like where, because somebody has nuclear weapons, then we don't want to do anything about it. Is that basically what people that are not wanting to support Ukraine, is that their rationality?
Yeah. See, my perspective on that whole thing from my point of view, from an American point of view, is we've been, regardless what you think about Putin or not, we've been poking the bear, us, the United States, and the West, basically, have been poking the bear for decades now. And provoking what's going on right now. And I think we still are. But at the same time, I think it's a, you know, what do you do? Are you just willing to let Ukraine just go? I mean, I don't think there's one, for me anyway, there isn't one easy answer. Let Putin do whatever he wants, or the other side of that. But I think this is all... There have been pieces put in place over the last few decades that have all led to this crap, and, you know, poking the bear basically. So, but I agree with you. I mean, what's to say? A lot of people have their opinions. You know, all he wants is this much or whatever. He wouldn't go into France. He wouldn't do this or that. I mean, I have no idea. I don't think anybody really has any idea what's in that dude's head. What's really in his head. We know what we hear, but we don't know. And same goes for our politicians. We don't know what's really going on behind the scenes or all anything like that. So, I mean, we can make judgments about from what we see in the news, but when it all comes down to it, the people that are in Ukraine, the people that have died because of this, the people that are struggling because of this, that all matters, but that doesn't make the news. What makes the news is the, you know, the big wigs that are pulling the levers and doing those things. That makes the news. So, yeah, I side with Ukraine on this whole situation, but at the same time, it bothers me because the, and not necessarily the money that we're throwing into it, but the fact that it's how corrupt my government is, I suppose. And the things that they're doing, it really doesn't have anything to do with Ukraine. It's the fact that my government is, I think, sort of responsible, in my opinion,
for a lot of this stuff going on. So it's hard to say one way or the other. I don't want to sound like I'm siding with Putin, because I absolutely am not. But at the same time, I don't want to say that I'm siding with the United States either, because or the West, because I'm absolutely not. I think that there's a lot more moving parts to this whole situation than a lot of people know. And again, I get what the media tells me out here. So it could be a lot of different things than what you're getting out there. But I get what, you know, what the media decides that the truth is out here.
Do you feel as an American citizen that your government is for you, for your prosperity?
No, I absolutely not. And it has really nothing. If they were doing more for the United States citizens, I don't think you'd see a lot of this uproar about the money that's going to Ukraine. Or if the politicians didn't, you know, weren't lining their pockets way before this even happened with some of the things they did in Ukraine, I don't think you would hear that uproar. If they acted like they gave a crap about the average citizen, about our economy, about the things that were going on, I don't think you would hear as much about all of this stuff. But they're more concerned with everything else. They're more concerned with every other country around the world than ours, which means they could, honestly, we are the, you know, these rats on the treadmill or whatever, mice on the treadmill. And we're here to keep the economy running and, you know, to keep them viable while they do all their other things. So no, I don't think that, they may say that, and there may be some people that believe that, but I'm not one of them. I don't think they have. I think we're a means to an end for them, basically.
I wonder what that goes into the career politician's head. Like, what is it they want to achieve when they get into politics in America?
Getting rich. That's it. I mean, it is it used to be, when this country was founded, it was by guys that were already rich. It was, you know, businessmen back then, which is why that, you know, all the Boston Tea Party and the taxes, these guys were businessmen and didn't like it. So, and these days you don't go into politics as a person of means or anything. You go in there to become a person of means. Whether that's trading the stock market, whether that's, you know, lining your pockets, doing favors for other people, lobbyists and things like that. That's all it's about. You look at some of the American politicians, and it's probably the same in the UK and France, and they go in and their net worth is a certain amount, maybe a couple hundred thousand. And then 3-4 years later, we've got this chick over here, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She went in as a bartender. She was broke, basically, had student loans. She's worth probably $20, $30 million right now. And it's been 8-9 years she's been in there, maybe a little bit longer than that. That's a lot of money for being a politician that makes $200,000-$300,000 a year.
Where
I'm not sure what they make,
from?
But it's not
like
a million.
Events or speaking events or what? Like backhanders?
I'm sure that's part of it, but there's no way, even if you do things like that, there's no way that, now they can trade in the stock market, which is another can of worms, because they're part of the committees that it's sort of like an insider trading thing, but it's lobbyists, you know, whether you're talking about all the different lobbyists, the NRA is a lobbying group. There are environmental lobbying groups and all of that stuff that will give favors and do things for these politicians in order for them to vote certain ways. And I think this is all politics. It's all shaking hands and, you know, doing favors for each other and under the table wheeling and dealing and all that stuff. But that's what they care about. And the only time they care about the American people is around this time of year, around election time. And then after that, it doesn't matter.
It seems like big government, whether it's the UK, Canada, America, Australia, it seems like a massive oil tanker where it's just flowing in this direction. And if one person jumps on it, tries to change the direction, whatever, unless they have access to the cockpit, it's not going to do anything. It's a system that's there, it's moving, yeah. And it can't be stopped. It's just a system. And it's not one person's fault that it's that bad. It's just like, it can't be stopped. It's
sort of too big to fail. Like we talk about banks being too big to fail. It's sort of gradually built and grown into the monster that it is. Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? We talk about in preparedness all the time too. At some point, something's going to break down, whether that's this country, another country or whatever, things are going to break down. And it's a matter of how much of the tower falls apart before they start rebuilding it. Does it go completely under? Do they take this oil tanker and run it into an iceberg, or does it just scrape the side of the ship and then they redirect course and decide to go a different direction? Something like that is bound to happen. I don't know if that's going to be in our lifetime or not, but something, you look at Rome. Rome was this huge empire that had all sorts of territory, and Rome is still around, but they're not the Roman Empire anymore. Or Italy's still around. Rome, I suppose, is just a place in Italy now, but the UK was all over the place. Spain, and they are much smaller now. So things do change, and it doesn't mean that if the United States collapses or falls apart that it's just completely going away. It just may change the way that things are done. And, you know, out there in Europe, that's going to be interesting where you are in Ukraine. That's going to be interesting in the next couple of decades to see how that does unfold, because I don't think anybody really knows right now what it's like for you, but I'm curious about that out there.
Well, I it's hard to say. I mean, I was looked after very well when I was a kid. You know, I had a good schooling, had a free university, I always had good healthcare. It's hard to say. I mean, but I still have good opportunities in the UK. I feel like, you know, my health has been looked after. But there's a lot of things that the governments are doing, which doesn't seem fair to the British citizens. You know, they should have priority for like in the housing and benefits and you know, there should be people that work should be prioritized. People are taking advantage of the system. Taxpayers don't like it. I have to wait and see. I mean, there's a lot of mental health problems as well, like this toxic wokeness is trying to keep through into very, very lots of areas, you know, keeping people separate. There's a lot of suicides and mental health issues in Scotland as well, and even in England.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point too, because I think we need to keep it in perspective. Like, I love being an American. I love the United States like crazy. And we sort of need to have perspective of how good that, like you were just talking about, and in my childhood wasn't the greatest, but it wasn't the worst. So we need to, you know, at the same time as acknowledging all of these different things, acknowledging how good we actually, it could be a whole lot worse, I'll put it that way. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot worse for a lot of people on this planet. So,
I think things are starting to seem, with this whole AI taking a lot of jobs, we're seeing like the social contract of people that are basically white collar workers come to an end, because people were convinced to move off their farms and that for a better life in the cities. And in the cities, it's okay, there is some industry, but most of that industry has been sold off to India or China. And people were left doing white collar jobs, but now a lot of that is redundant and not needed anymore. So we have very vulnerable societies that are basically a whole bunch of people that could be unemployed.
Mm-hmm. That to me is one of my biggest concerns. You know, a lot of people with prepping, you don't hear about that all that much, but I think the next 10, 20 years. For this planet, I think you think back to, I'm older than you, but when I was a kid watching things like Star Trek and stuff like that, and that was the sci-fi stuff, I think we are headed into that sci-fi era for real, where you talk about all the AI and right now we're at the very beginning where it's chatbots and things like that, and it is taking some jobs because it's making people sort of obsolete, and companies are greedy by nature, so they're going to increase their bottom line. Forget about Joe and Jill or anything like that. They're going to increase their bottom line. But that's just going to get worse and worse and worse to the point where maybe you are looking at something like universal basic income, which I don't see that working at all. I don't see that working out for us as people, because what's the incentive to go do something or to work if, you know, if you're going to make the exact same amount every month from the government, they're giving you the exact same amount of food, the exact same amount of credits or whatever the hell it is. What is your incentive to innovate, to do anything? And I don't know, but I think we are in for some sort of seismic shift in the next couple of decades because of all of this technology. And the one thing that we don't talk about a lot is the one thing that could take it all down is something like an EMP. It's all built on electronics, right?
I think a UBI only really works if you have a resource that's more abundant enough that other people are going to do the work for you. So, for example, Saudi Arabia, or the UAE, I think all those citizens, they get like a salary a month because they sell off the oil. So basically, they're having other countries and nationalities do the work for them because they can spend that money on imports and food and labor. So when with the AI, there's no monopoly of that. It's not like oil. Either the oil is under your ground or it's not. But with AI, yeah, you have basically, there's no incentive for, so like those monarchies in the Arab countries, they basically, the kings and that, they want to keep their populations happy. They don't want to have a revolution. So, and they're in a tiny, tiny minority. But those companies with the AI, they're like spread out amongst all those corporate structures. So it's very hard to the ordinary person to know who owns what. So there's no moral, or there's, I guess there is a moral, but there's no like enforcement mechanism for those power brokers to give out the goodness of their heart. And that's why taxation is good, as much as we don't like it, is that it would be ideal if everybody could be out of the goodness of their heart, help those around you that are, that only have, say, Jesus says, if you have two coats, give away one, right? But also conversely, it says in the Bible, if you don't work, you don't eat. So there's a balance there. But with man's history and man's heart, I don't see how, basically, there's those fat cats, I don't see where the motivation is to feed those around them that can't, don't have jobs.
Or just giving them scraps.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to feel like they're okay, here, we're gonna throw you the, and that's what leaders of all countries throughout history, right, have done, basically. They live like the fat cats, and they make sure and just appease the masses so they don't come up and try to, you know, revolt and do things like that. It's going to be the same thing. It's going to be so different. I don't know. It's one of those things that I'm sort of glad that I'm going to be around, hopefully, the next couple of decades to see this everything change. Because right now, sort of like when the internet first really got big, started getting into people's homes, you saw that, how it completely transformed society. And I think we're sort of in the next, that next phase where, I mean, it could do some massive damage, and, you know, talk about, you know, Skynet and things like that, or maybe a combination of both, but it could do a lot of good, but it really depends on those power brokers and how it's handled and who decides to capitalize and who gets left in the dust with all this stuff. It's going to be an interesting couple decades, I'll say that. And again, and that's part of the reason I prepare too, is to set myself up. It's not for the Mad Max type things. It's for these, if inflation gets way out of control or money is tight and things like that, I have stuff that I can draw on, and it at the very least for a little bit, and maybe weather that storm. But I think there's a storm coming, and maybe not, but I don't know. there's so much potential for this stuff to go haywire with all the AI and the social credit scores and the things that are going to be deemed necessary to, you know, the personal freedoms and like that are going to get encroached on. I mean, you see it now. I got cameras. I know there's a bunch of stuff going on in UK with the cameras and I forget what the group's called, but they're tearing down the traffic cameras and stuff like that. And then you've got the social credit scores and social credit scores in China and things like that, that, and the World Economic Forum. I mean, there's just this whole, maybe it doesn't, maybe it's just my skeptical brain that sort of goes this direction, but I don't have much faith that it's all going to turn into sunshine and roses like they want us to believe. I think there's going to be some great advancements, but at the same time, some massive growing pains.
Yeah, I'm pessimistic because we saw the whole, during the pandemic, we had the whole groupthink. And this showed me that all those leaders of nations, there's no independence there. They all just follow whoever's pulling the strings.
Yeah.
You know?
And the whole world was in concert. It wasn't like it was the United States or it was Europe. I mean, Australia kind of went way overboard, but the whole world was in concert with controlling people. And then the sheep were just right along with it. Oh, this is what they say? Man, okay. It didn't even question it. You get locked up, you have to close your business down, you know, didn't even question it. This is just what we have to do because they say so. No, we don't.
So the historical precedent is there is that we basically, it's not looking very rosy, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But another reason why I choose to prepare and do things like that, because I just don't know. Maybe nothing happens in my lifetime. Maybe it does. Maybe it takes longer than I expect it to for all of this stuff to come to fruition. And maybe it does get handled responsibly, although I have my doubts. But maybe nothing does happen. And it, at least I'm better prepared for that. And then if it does, if something does happen, then, no, like I said earlier, no guarantees, but I'm as ahead of the game as possible that I can be. At least I'm paying attention. I'm not going to be one of those people that are just completely blindsided with all this stuff that's possible in the future. And, you know, when did this happen? When did that happen?
Yeah.
Or one of these people that are just completely happy to have universal basic income, you know, that are just fine with it because they're getting free money. Sort of like the pandemic when the government handed out free money to the people. Everybody's like, okay. But you don't pay attention to all the money you're giving them all year long. You give them thousands of dollars all year long and they give you a $200 check back and you're happy about it? That's bad business.
I just don't see those elites going to be too excited about helping everybody be happy, have a universal basic income. People that will rent you into Bolivia, they don't care if you go homeless. They just want their rent. So like if you get in the way of their maximizing profits, you can go homeless. You can, you know, I just don't see the goodness of people's hearts, unfortunately.
Well, you got the World Economic Forum talking about how this utopian society is going to be and nobody's going to own anything and you're going to eat bugs and things like that. Nobody's going to own anything and you'll like it except for them. They're talking about us down here. They're not talking about them. They are going to own everything. And it's going to be life is going to be, in their ideas anyway, life is going to be a subscription model where, you know, if you need to, you've got to watch your carbon footprint so you can only travel this far, that far. What's that?
There was an interesting video that talks about how cities demasculinize men. And if the WEF wants you to live in some cubicle in an apartment somewhere, it's going to basically... See, man does not like rules. Man likes to be free. In this society, it will just completely feminize men, worse than cities already do to men.
Yeah, and I hate to say it, but it seems like it's succeeding pretty well. And hopefully it's just because a lot of us out there that just, you know, there's women and there's men. I mean, we're just biologically different. And hopefully there's a lot of us out there that just won't put up with it. And you know what, if that's you, if you're that dude that you don't want to do that, by all means go do that, but don't try to push that whole narrative on an entire population. And I think that's what's going on, but that's a great point. I never even thought about it. Sort of would, if you're, you know, working in this little cubicle, even guys that work in offices all day long, right? A lot of them like to go outdoors and sort of unwind and have barbecues and do things like that, right? Because that's a guy. That's just what we do. Go, even if it's just going fishing, sitting out there by yourself for hours, you know, all day long. That's just, that's how we, that's how we are. And I don't think living in a little cubicle, a little tiny apartment, or in a little 15-minute city is going to fly with a lot of guys. Wouldn't fly with me.
Yeah. So how do people get in touch with you, Dale, and get involved with what you're doing?
I've got my YouTube channel, which is The Bug Out Location. Then I've also got the website, thebugoutlocation.net, which is preparedness courses, you know, sort of how to the food storage and what are the important things. Nothing, no plans for like building nuclear bunkers or anything like that. I don't go that direction. I try not to too much anyway, unless we're talking like we are today with some hypothetical stuff, because I think it is important, but I think there's a whole lot more important, whole lot that's more important that we should be paying attention to. And that's getting by tomorrow, getting by next week, next month, and things like that, and preparing for economic issues and preparing for, you know, power outages and things like that. But I talk about that at thebugoutlocation.net. I've got my main website, which is survivalistprepper.net, which I haven't done a lot on lately, but that's my home base, which I haven't been home in a while. So mainly the Bug Out Location YouTube channel.
Well, it's great that you can support yourself through your passion and hobby. I mean, that's where a lot of people want to get to. And I'm excited to see how you do that YouTube channel from nothing in 8 months to like 30,000 subscribers. It's just such an amazing feat.
Yeah. And it's something I enjoy too. I enjoy the talking with people and teaching and learning and all of that stuff. And when I started this, it was basically me starting out on this journey. So it was almost like this is what I'm doing. What are you doing? And I'm learning as much as I can. So I didn't start out being this expert, you know, Mr. Prepper, talking about this and that. This is what you got to do here. You're going to die. This is what you got to do here. There's a lot of people that do that these days. I just sort of went along my journey. And then 10, 15 years later, here I am when I know what I'm talking about with some of the stuff anyway, and I'm still learning.
So as my last question, feel free to add anything else you want to share, of course. For most of the Americans and a lot of people in the world, they're basically living hand to mouth or foot to mouth, whatever the proper expression is. If you're just living paycheck to paycheck or even less than that somehow, and you happen to like borrow money, how do you get to become more prepared?
Yeah, that's a great point, because that is a lot of people in this country, and I think that around the world, some even worse off than we are here in the United States. But I think it's you've got to have that mindset, like you were talking earlier about, if you wake up in a panic attack about nuclear bombs and stuff like that, you got to sort of quell that a little bit. And just instead of thinking I've got to get everything done right now, if you sat there and made a spreadsheet of all the stuff you needed for preparedness, I'm sure you've done it with all the everyday carry stuff. And in my bug out bag, there's probably $1,000 worth of stuff. You sat there and made a spreadsheet, it would be like, holy crap, I'm not even going to start this. I'm not even going to do it. Food is so expensive now. How am I going to get a year's worth of food stored? But you sort of nickel and dime it. You sort of take it small pieces at a time and understand that you're not going to get this done overnight. You're not going to get this done in the next week or so. Maxing out your credit cards is a bad idea, because these corporations, these banks, if the economy does tank, they're coming to get their stuff. They're going to get their stuff, whether it's taking the stuff back that you bought or whatever. So Just taking it one piece at a time and being okay with the fact that you're not going to be able to get it done this week, next week, or next month. But if you look back a year from now, you'll look at what you've done over that course of the year, just small parts, and you'll find that you're more prepared and you're ready for, you know, a lot of these things. And you're smarter about, you understand more about all these things than you ever thought you would be. So, yeah, don't think of it as a, you know, it's like that saying, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? You don't think of it the big picture. I got to get all this stuff right now. Just do what you can. Focus on those important things, get those taken care of, and then on to the next step. And then look back a year from now and, you know, you'll find you've done pretty well.
All right. Fantastic, Dale. Well, wish you all the best in your journey, and we'll keep in touch. And thanks for coming on the podcast today, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. You as well. And anytime you ever want to do this in the future, I'm game. Yeah, fun to talk about this stuff.